Welcome to the Sales Thinker Radio Show, where we pick the brains of sales professionals, managers, and executives who are serving their customers, advancing the state of our art, and exceeding their goals. Sales Thinker Radio is brought to you by Dreamland Interactive in Atlanta, Georgia, building e-reps and solving the prospecting problem. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Todd Youngblood.
Good morning and welcome back to Sales Thinker Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Todd Youngblood. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
I am doing awesome. I mean, we have had such a plethora of interviews this week already. My brain is getting overflowed with the kind of stuff we're learning.
I know. I love it. And I love the fact that we are friends with a lot of fellows and I should say ladies in the sales racket, because they all put out these great books, and they just give us all kinds of great fodder for continuing our education, not only in sales, but in business. And today's show promises to be no different. I want to welcome our guest. His name is Mike Weinberg. He's a sales coach, a consultant, speaker, and author. Welcome to the show, Mike Weinberg.
Thank you, guys. It is an honor to be with you this morning.
Well, the honor and pleasure is ours, so thank you for making the time to join us, Mike. Before we get into it, we're here to talk about your new book, but before we do that, do take a second and tell us a little about you and your background.
Yeah, thanks. I am a transplanted New Yorker. I've lost most of my accent, but I'm from New York, from the city, and I've been in St. Louis 20 years this month, and I've got a family here, and by day, I'm a sales professional. I've been a top-producing new business development guy in several organizations, and then after about 6 years leading sales organizations, really decided my passion and calling was consulting and coaching and helping other companies with their new business development efforts. So in early 2010, I launched out as a new sales coach, and it's been quite a ride since then.
Well, tell us more about your business. Tell us about the coaching work that you do.
I have worked with about 20 different organizations over the last couple years. The way I work, because I dive in rather deep with a sales organization. I can probably work with five or six companies at a time, and that's really about it. And it's a blend of coaching, training, consulting. A lot of times I'm brought in by senior executives who want to get a boost for their sales team, or they're struggling picking up new clients. And I'll do some team sessions, and I'll work one-on-one with some sales folks. And I'll even hop in the car with a rep or two to learn the business and do some coaching in the field. And what tends to happen is I uncover some things beyond just sales process or sales technique that could help the company. And many of those engagements kind of morph into more consulting, where I'm helping the senior executives on issues kind of important to sales success.
Mike, I want to shift back and get the attention on your book. I know how much work it takes and how much effort it takes to pull something like that together. What were you thinking? Why'd you write this thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I've had a few folks ask me about book number two, and my quick response is talk to my wife, because that's not going to happen in the near term. You know, it was a labor of love. I've been told for about 10 years I should have a book, and then being a solo consultant, it was kind of on the front burner in my mind. And actually, a few publishers found me last summer and appreciated kind of my simple angle on new business development. So I put the proposal together last summer. And really, the way I got into writing the book, because I'm concerned by what I'm seeing today among sales teams. There's a shortage of folks that know how to go out and create business out of the dirt. You know, we got a lot of people in sales today who succeeded or maybe even thrived when enough business came their way. But when demand dried up and industries changed, and we had the kind of the meltdown of 2008 that we're still living in, a lot of sales folks are in a world of hurt. And without sales mentors today or a process to go figure out how to get new business, a lot of people, a lot of companies are struggling. So that was really the motivation to put it together.
Mike, the book is called New Sales Simplified. It's been really almost freaky, Todd, but the last couple of weeks in our studio, we've a very, very common theme has been simplification of business, yep, of sales process, of this, of that. Why is simplifying such a powerful idea and concept these days, Mike?
There's a lot of ways to go with that question. I'll answer it from the hunting and sales perspective. It's just not that complicated. It seems that there's a lot of theories and a lot of folks preaching magic bullets today. And I think because there's so much pain and so much confusion in sales forces today, that people are coming up with more and more complex theories or excuses why things aren't working. So I really worked hard to simplify and break down a very, very clear and easily implementable framework for putting together a new business attack. And frankly, here's what I say. Sales is simple, and anyone that tells you it's complicated, they're either confused themselves or they're using that complexity to kind of cover up their own lame effort or their own poor results. It's just not that complicated.
Mike, I want to stick on this simplification theme, but in a specific context. I've always felt, or my own experience was, having a mentor was a huge, huge deal to me, not only early in my career, but I mean, it continues to be a big deal. You've written about, and you mentioned a minute ago, where did all the sales mentors go? Mm-hmm. Talk about the whole mentoring thing a bit.
Yeah, I owe a lot of what I know about sales to mentors, from my dad to some CEOs I worked for to my first sales manager that really broke me in as a sales guy. And I'm somewhat terrified for young salespeople today based on what I'm seeing. There are no mentors. Sales managers used to take pride in teaching their people how to sell. And honestly, managers were really the frontline mentor for most newer salespeople. And today I see sales managers who have become desk jockeys, who spend a ton more time dealing with administration and management issues. But it's a rare thing to get out in the field and work with a sales guy. I mean, today, sales management in a lot of places means your head is buried in Salesforce.com looking at activity reports, not teaching someone how to make a phone call or riding along on a sales call or an important presentation. And it's frightening to me, the lack of mentoring going on. I think, frankly, you know, it's good for my business, right? It's good for your business, but it's not helping the professional sales community. I wish there were more sales managers taking an interest in their people's skills and development than I see.
Mike, I'm going to push back a little bit, because I think sales managers are interested in developing their people's skills, but I don't think they have time to do it. You mentioned CRM a minute ago as something, you know, getting buried in it. What do you think is causing it? What's the root cause of this decline in mentorship?
Boy, that's a big question, Todd. I agree with you that sales managers want to see their people do better, and that time is one of the obstacles, because the frontline sales manager is being dragged in six different directions between customer issues and production issues and issues, senior management meetings that have nothing to do with sales. So I think time is an issue. But honestly, what I also see is a lot of the population of sales managers today are folks that never really had to sell themselves in a tough environment. They were not prospectors. They didn't have a process for going out and finding new customers. So therefore, they're not in a position to mentor or teach newer folks how to do it, because they never had to do it themselves.
Mike, I think that it's possible that the last two questions that we've talked about on the show here are related. I think the fact that there is not mentoring, or not as much mentoring as needed, and the fact that sales managers are in fact desk jockeys in many respects, and complicated CRM systems and all these things lead a sales rep to view the sales process as complicated and not simple. Do you see a tie-in on those two problems?
That's a great observation. Absolutely. And you know, part of it's the whole shiny new toy thing. You know, so we've got these new tools and new toys, and there's a lot of people telling us that. You know, I mean, here's how I say it. Salesforce.com is supposed to work for us. We're not supposed to work for it. But when I go in a lot of companies, I see the opposite. I see that, you know, what's in the daily task list is driving all the behavior. No one's stepping back and looking at a big picture view of what they should be working on, or taking a strategic approach to the marketplace. So, I mean, it's a combination. Yeah, it's time. It's new toys. It's complex systems and new theories. And the whole sales 2.0 movement, while there's beautiful help in inbound marketing, and there were some brilliant people espousing the importance of all the parts of new media and inbound marketing, some people are also preaching dangerous words that say prospecting doesn't work anymore. So, you know, you have salespeople that don't want to hunt in the first place or don't know how, and they're being told lies by folks in the professional sales community, you know, telling them you don't need a prospect anymore, that doesn't work. And you combine that with new media and CRM systems and lack of mentoring and a tough economy. And what we have is a mess, and a whole lot of companies and a whole lot of salespeople falling short on their new business development objectives.
All right. We'll be back with Mike Weinberg after this commercial break.
If your concern is water, then Water Online is the destination website for you. At wateronline.com, you'll find the most up-to-date and useful information about municipal and industrial water and wastewater, from collection and treatment to distribution and disposal. Today's hot-button water issues, crumbling infrastructure, government mandates on water quality, and dwindling worldwide supply demand innovative solutions. Get ahead of the curve at wateronline.com and sign up for our free email newsletter.
All right, and we're back with Mike Weinberg, sales coach, consultant, speaker, and author of New Sales Simplified.
During the break, Mike, I was thinking back to my early career, and I just remember the reaction of my mom and my grandfather. You know, in their eyes, I was the golden boy going through high school and college, and then I got a job as a salesman. And I remember them both being devastated by that. And I still see it today, this anti-salesperson reflex. Why is that? Talk about how we can overcome that, or do we just ignore it and say, the heck with them? They don't know how much fun they're missing.
Oh, man. You opened up a big can of worms there, Todd. First of all, I'm a proud salesperson. You know, and I think more people in the sales profession need to speak up and be proud of what they do, especially if their mindset is that their job is to solve customer issues and bring value to the marketplace. You know, it is not a sales is not a low level or low grade job. So let's start there. However, addressing the question about the what I like to call that anti-salesperson reflex that we get from most buyers, and frankly everybody has it, and we all, even though we're in sales, we have it. I mean, you have a certain reaction when you're approached by a salesperson that you're really not interested in visiting with, or you take a phone call you didn't mean to take. We all have that kind of reflex resistance. The problem is, if you're good in sales, you probably didn't do something to create that reaction, that negative reaction to the salesperson. Other morons have ruined it for us. You know, they were there before us. They poisoned the water. They were abusive to buyers on the phone. They were rude. They scheduled an appointment and promised value, but went in and kind of did the show up and throw up and, you know, puked all over a prospect for 40 minutes and didn't ask one meaningful question and was off target. So we all face this reality that buyers resist salespeople. The key is, I don't think we can ignore it as you threw out as an option there. We need to know that buyers have this reflex resistance, and we need to prepare for it and be able to overcome it. And there's a lot of ways we can do that. And, you know, I address some of those in the book. The biggest one I'll just throw out here is that we need to not act and smell and sound like that kind of salesperson that turns everybody off. You know, lose that sales voice. You know, how are you today? And I get with sales folks that I'm coaching, and I'll ask them to make a few calls and so I can observe them. And these nice, normal, conversational people turn into sales dorks when they get on the phone or get face-to-face with a prospect. And I'm like, where did that voice come from? Who taught you that? And then, you know, they put on this air where they want to sound like a salesperson, which, frankly, is the exact opposite thing we want to do. So it's definitely something we need to be aware of, and we need to alter our approach to not raise those defense shields of buyers.
You mentioned before the break, Mike, this notion about prospecting, and then some people say it doesn't work anymore, or those that obviously don't know how to do it. I think part of the problem is that prospecting is done in many ways so poorly that it does lead to this anti-salesperson problem. Do you agree? And talk more about prospecting.
Yeah, you're right. It's done poorly, and some of it's poor because people haven't had to do it, or they don't know how. And most people are not good on that. Here's the reality: the telephone is really the key delineator between the professional new business development person and the poser. And there's a lot of people that are not very good on the phone. Some because they don't want to be, some because they don't try, some because no one's ever really showed them how to do it. So there's a lot of what I'll call sales malpractice going on that does turn off buyers. So yeah, poor behavior from other salespeople does cause that. But there are easy fixes. I mean, it's not that hard to work on a client-centered story that might pique somebody's interest on the phone, you know, and in a 10 or 15 second snippet to talk about issues that you address for your clients in a normal conversational tone and ask someone if they'd like to visit with you because you may be able to bring them some value. You know, minor little tricks and a sharper sales story can really take someone who's struggling with prospecting and give them new hope. You know, a little bit of a story, a little bit of technique on the phone, and a better structure for an initial sales call, and you can get a lot of lift as a salesperson.
Mike, you referred to storytelling twice in the comments you just made there, and I'm also a huge believer in the power of a good story. Talk a little bit more about how you build one of those. How do you create one of those, especially somebody that's not just a natural storyteller?
Yeah, it takes some work. And what I've learned over the years of doing this, it's not natural for a lot of salespeople. You know, I'll walk into a new client and I'll ask several sales folks and senior executives, tell me about your company. You know, what is it you do? And I'll hear, you know, six different stories and none of them are very good. Usually they're boring and self-focused, which is even worse. So it takes some work. And I have a kind of my own formula for creating your sales story. I expand on this in one of the chapters of the book. But there's, in my mind, there's a three-part, kind of three building blocks to create a strong story. And the first building block is really the most critical. It's the client issues that you address, right, for your customers. It's what pains do you take away? What problems do you solve? What results do you help your clients achieve? And maybe what opportunities do you help them capture? That's where the power comes from our story. When we talk about what matters to the customer, right? Their pains, their issues, the results they're trying to achieve. That's where the strength comes from our story. Then we sneak in what we do briefly. Here's our offering. Here's our solution. And then we finish up the third part of the story is why we're different. You know, list out a few of your key differentiators. You know, why should someone choose you and your organization to solve those issues that you addressed in the first part? And it's very simple, and it does take some work to kind of to sketch it out. But when you have a great story, and when I say story, I mean talking points that get a prospect's attention. And from those talking points, you could sketch out a phone call or a voicemail or maybe a longer email. And you have your minute to 2 minute kind of, you know, I don't call it an elevator pitch because, heck, there's not a whole lot of business being conducted on elevators. But, you know, in that time in a sales call when you're kind of sharing the overview, when you have that strong story, you are much more confident and you do a whole lot better job helping the buyer understand why you're there and really communicating that it's about him or her, not about you.
All right, Mike, talk about social media and email and voicemail. I think these are tools that, gosh, I think a lot of salespeople still are very ineffectively using to their advantage. What do you say?
Yeah, it's all over the board. I've seen all extremes from salespeople that have totally given up on traditional prospecting, even emailing, and are trying to do all their work through LinkedIn and Twitter and other social media. And then on the other extreme, I see people totally ignoring it and not taking advantage of some of these great new weapons we have as salespeople. I'm a fan of a blended approach. You know, let's take the best of what used to work on the phone, and then a lot of folks incorporating, you know, what they would say on the phone, but saying it in an email format. And frankly, I've seen some very, very effective email prospecting because it takes the performance aspect away, right? You don't have to worry about your voice tone or you're not that nervous sending an email. And a lot of folks just freak out when it comes to prospecting on the phone. So I've seen taking a really strong story using an email form to pique someone's interest and then earn a call back or at least warm the prospect up for a future call. Some of the most effective salespeople today are blending in LinkedIn and Twitter. In fact, I was with a guy recently who told a story of a prospect that would not return his calls, wasn't responding to anything, and he followed her on Twitter and started replying to some of her posts, and they built up a little dialogue, and then through a direct message said, hey, I'd love to talk with you, and she said, I'd love to. You know, same woman that wouldn't take his phone call, but in a Twitter dialogue ended up in relationship and led to a substantial conversation. So, you know, I see it all extremes, but definitely the folks that are winning today are blending in the best of what's new with what's always worked.
But Mike, you can muck up social media, email, and voicemail and stir up those anti-salesperson embers, can you not?
Oh, sure. You pitch away. If it's all about you everything you do is promotional and broadcasting how great you are and how smart you are and here's why I'm wonderful and what we can do for you. And if that's all you're doing is pitching, just like a presentation doesn't work in sales, presentation is just part of sales. Same thing in social media and prospecting. It's got to become a dialogue. We must add value to the community and create interest. That's how we make connections and move relationships forward, not by broadcasting, you know, our pitch to everybody.
Mike, you know from past conversations you and I have had that I'm a huge believer in and student of sales process. And when I hear you talking about integrating, appropriately integrating social media tools, it leads my brain back to that whole process. But you got a section in your book that says they don't own their own sales process. What are you talking about there?
Oh, yeah. You know what I see, Todd? I see salespeople agreeing to whatever prospects want to do. That's really where I dive in terms of process. I've worked with salespeople that show up and make a presentation during a first meeting because a prospect found them and said, I'd like you to come in and do a capabilities overview. And as much as I argue against it, the salesperson will still go in there without knowing the rules or really why they were brought in. And they'll get naked and do a presentation before doing any discovery. That's silly to me, and that's a violation of sales process. I've worked with other folks that they have a great initial conversation with a client face-to-face, a prospect face-to-face, and the prospect will say, I'd like a proposal. And the salesperson, often being judged by the number of proposals he cranks out, will run back to his office and complete the proposal, you know, the full-blown thing, spend hours putting together a proposal, full-blown program pricing, but not know any of the rules, not understand really what the compelling issues were that drove the client to request the proposal, or who the other decision makers were, or decision influencers, or budget, or timelines, or competitive landscape, or hit all the things we want to know before we do proposals. So when I say they don't own their sales process, what I'm really getting at is that they're not dictating how they do business. They're simply responding to and agreeing with whatever the prospect asked them to do. And that is not a recipe for success.
On that note, Mike, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. God, it really flew by.
It's ridiculous. Are you sure your clock is right? It seemed like about 3-4 minutes to me.
Yeah, no, it felt like that way. Hey, Mike, before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you, learn more about your work, and where can they get their hands on this book?
First, I want to say thanks to both of you, Todd, for the time this morning. It's great being with you, and I appreciate your work and enjoy following you folks. Secondly, in terms of getting in touch with me, I blog pretty regularly at newsalescoach.com, and I am very active on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is Mike_Weinberg. That's Weinberg.
Where can they get their hands on the book?
The book is just being released as we speak. Barnes & Noble's featuring the book in stores in a nonfiction new release display across the country, and they're in stock at Amazon.com right now.
Outstanding. Well, Mike Weinberg, sales coach, consultant, speaker, and author of New Sales Simplified. It was great to have you, and the pleasure was all ours. Thanks for making the time to join us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that wraps this show. On behalf of today's guest, Mike Weinberg, my co-host, Todd Youngblood, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Sales Thinker Radio.